This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
16th to go, an American Pharoah and firing line, and it's American Pharoah pulling away late. American Pharoah rules the Derby!
Run Happy just keeps coming at him past the 16th pole. Run Happy, and boy, does this horse love to run. The aptly named Run Happy for Edgar Prado to take it.
Also sponsored by Abracadabra Farm, Adena Springs, Airdrie Stud, BetAmerica.com, Brisnet.com, Cal Density, Castleton Lions, Claiborne Farm, Coolmore, Daily Racing Form, Darley, DerbyBox.com, FarmPaint.com, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, Gainsway, Jimmy John's, Kentucky Bank, Kentucky Downs, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, the Lexus Store of Lexington, Maryland Thoroughbred, Mill Ridge, Nicholson Insurance, Owner View, Pin Oak Stud, Ramsey Farm, Santa Anita, Spendthrift Farm, Washington Hay, and Woodbine Entertainment.
But there's no catching Wedding Toast. Wedding Toast, much the best here, all the way in the Beldame.
There will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, and we are together once again in our Lexington, Kentucky studios on a balmy Saturday morning here on the 12th of December in the Bluegrass, and happy to have you with us throughout North America on Sirius XM Channel 93, on affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and everybody tuning in worldwide on our website, on your smartphone, or your tablet at horseracingradio.net. Good morning, JT.
Good morning. Or two tuna cans with a string in between.
Yeah, that's where you're going to go.
You can tune us in pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, it's really cool. Listeners in more than 160 countries have made us their home for racing coverage here this year, and can't thank you enough for all that support. Love having you on board each and every week.
We've got to get the other 30 countries, right? There's like 190.
I Googled that. It's like 190 something countries.
How are 30 countries missing us is what I want to know.
I don't know.
I was going to say, you can run, but you cannot hide.
Well, that voice you just heard is our special guest co-host for the next 2 hours this morning. He is Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron, happy to have you on board, my friend.
I got to be here for 2 hours?
2 hours. 8 to 10, man.
Well, you're the guest, so you can go whenever you want. It's up to you. You probably won't be able to tolerate us for 2 hours.
Well, let me tell you what I was thinking. Let me tell you the way this all came about. This past fall, right before the Breeders' Cup, there was a event to benefit the Bluegrass Farm Charities here in Lexington. And Tom Thornberry is on the board of the Farm Charities, and he came to me and he said, hey, is there something you could do through the radio show that we could offer as a silent auction item? And we came up with the concept that we would auction off a spot to be a guest co-host on an Equine Forum program with Jude and I. And Chris McCarron got locked into a bidding duel, and much like he's done more than 7,000 times in his Hall of Fame career, he came out on top and he got the victory, and that is the reason that he is with us here today.
Yeah, and I'm happy to be here. The money went to a great cause, and now I'm going to have some fun this morning.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah, been looking forward to it all week long. I posted a picture of you, and David Miller tweeted he couldn't figure out where that picture came from in the Glen Hill Farm silks, and it's the same one that they put on those boards in the Santa Anita Grandstand. You're wearing the Glen Hill Farm silks, and I told him it was like maybe like the early 80s when they did that. Is that when that happened?
The colors that I'm wearing on those boards that they put in the Santa Anita Grandstand, that was Ed Gann's colors.
Oh.
And that was done, you're right, in the early 80s.
Okay.
They had Sandy Hawley, Daryl McCarg, Lafitte, Shu, let's see, who else? There were about eight of us. And
I think Dalhousie was there, too.
Eddie, of course. How could I forget Eddie D? But those colors that I'm wearing are Glen Hill Farms colors, and I'm basically leaning on the rail in the old paddock that's in front of the grandstand in Hollywood Park.
That's what I thought. I thought it was a Hollywood Park picture. Yeah,
that's right. It is. Yeah.
You know, I'm listening to Chris rattle off some of those names. How good was that jockey colony out there when you were riding in California?
I don't think there's much doubt that it was the best ever. Yeah. I mean, you know, when I first moved out there from Maryland in 1978, I was in awe. And, you know, I rode, as you know, at Laurel Buoy and Pimlico and Delaware Park for 4 years before I moved out west.
How old were you at that time?
When I moved out there? Yeah. 23.
Wow. 23-year-old kid going out and riding with those names.
Yep. And I thought I was pretty confident in myself at the time because I won 1,011 races my first 2 years that I rode. 546 the first year and 465 the second year. And so I was pretty high on myself. And I didn't necessarily feel intimidated on the track. This is going to sound silly. I felt intimidated in the jocks room. Once I was on a horse out on the track, I was really in my element. And I was confident that that I would do well. And I did. I finished fourth in my very first full meeting at Hollywood Park behind, I think, Darrell won the meet. Lafitte was second. Sandy was third. And Shoemaker was fifth. I was fourth. And I'm thinking, wow, this is off to a really neat start. But being intimidated inside the jocks room was a case of the thing I thought I was going to miss the most by leaving Maryland was the camaraderie in the jocks room. We had a great colony of riders in the room at Bowie and Pimlico and Laurel. Everybody got along really, really well. And Bill Passmore was a real prankster. I mean, he used to, you know, pull jokes on people, fill your colors with, you know, sleeve of the colors with shaving cream right before you have to go check in the clerk of scales and silly stuff, you know. But it was always a very light atmosphere. It always alleviated any kind of pressure that you may feel, especially on the big days. So I had I moved my tack out west, and I didn't know what the jockey's room atmosphere was going to be like. And that's why I felt intimidated. I knew the atmosphere on the racetrack very well because I had ridden thousands of races by then. But being in the room with the likes of all these Hall of Famers I wasn't sure how to behave, you know, because I'm a prankster too. I can pitch as well as I can take it, and hopefully I can take it as well as I pitch. But so I'd been there about 2 weeks, and the clerk of scales at Hollywood is yelling, Dean Scarborough, remember Dean?
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
And he's yelling, all right, boys, come on, let's check for the first. Let's go. Get ready for the first. And so I sit down on my bench in front of my locker, go to put my boots on, and they're glued to the floor.
Oh, no.
My boots were glued to the floor. And I'm thinking, what in the world? Thank goodness I had three pairs of boots, you know? So I didn't find out for a few days, but Shoemaker did it.
That's what I was going to bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
He used to do some crazy things. I was talking to Mr. Kilrow one day in the paddock at a horse inn, and Shoe comes up behind me and he slaps his whip between my legs, and I jumped like 5 feet in the air. Right, and Mr. Kilrow, he didn't know whether to laugh or get upset. You know, he's like, "Look, what the heck? What's going on here?" You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he used to do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, I watched him walk out on the paddock at Santa Anita into the walking ring there, and he's getting ready to ride for Howard Keck, one of Charlie's biggest owners, owner of Ferdinand, and well, his wife owned Ferdinand, but. Anyway, this guy, you know, rich oil man from Texas, from Houston, and he's dressed up in this beautiful suit, and Shoe walks up behind him. He can't see Shoe, but Shoe takes his stick and just taps him on the right toe of Mr. Keck, and then Shoe slips around the left side of him. Mr. Keck looks down, and he's turning around like, he looks up in the sky. He didn't know where that little tap came from. But that was Shoe. He was wonderful as far as being able to really keep things light and have fun while you're engaging in such a highly competitive field.
And even later on when he was in the wheelchair, we were at Del Mar one day, and he had a game of chicken with me on a dead run. He's got the wheelchair in full flight, headed straight for me. And, you know, I was kind of like paralyzed for a second.
Oh,
to you know, like
that's a strange,
it's a strange, a
strange
word,
to use.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, he just kept coming, and he never did stop. I mean, I ended up jumping out of the way. Patty Gallagher was on the floor laughing.
You got to picture this, Mike. He's in this wheelchair, and he's a quad. Okay,
yeah.
So he's controlling the direction and the speed, fully controlling this wheelchair with a straw. It's called Sip and Puff.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
And he was able to maneuver his wheelchair as well as he was able to maneuver the horses on the track.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was a freak with that thing. It was unbelievable. He could do a lot of things. And it never, I'm sure it bothered him a little bit, but it didn't never seem to. You know what I mean? His attitude never, ever changed that whole time. And we got to be pretty close. I mean, I used to actually pick him up at his house and carry him across the street to the beach for like beach parties and stuff, because his wheelchair didn't handle the sand very well. And, but I mean, he's always the same. I mean, just consistently a great guy to be around.
I only saw him lose his temper once in the jocks room. P-Val had shut him off somewhere in this race, and it was a stake, and you know, Shu felt strongly that it had cost him the race and stuff. Pat Valenzuela was the only rider, only person I ever heard Shu raise his voice at. And it didn't last long. I mean, 5 minutes later, he's laughing and joking and smiling and stuff.
Yeah.
Some of the other pranks he would do, he'd be out at a really fancy restaurant with like the likes of Dr. Curlin, Robert Curlin, one of the pioneering orthopedic surgeons. He was a medical director at Hollywood Park for years. He and Shu were very close friends, but they'd go to a place like Chasen's in Los Angeles or some fancy restaurant in Beverly Hills, and Shu would load up Doc's sport coat or suit coat pocket with the fine silverware. He'll take it off the table and just put it in Doc's pocket, and Doc would get out on the sidewalk to get his car from the valet guy and reach in and go, what's this one? Sir, are you trying to steal our silverware? It's just stupid, silly little stuff that really kept people smiling and grinning.
All these things that go on behind the scenes at racetracks that people have just no idea, you know, about the personalities of the people that are involved with this sport. But let me tell you, there's a lot of characters involved with thoroughbred racing, and obviously Shoemaker among the top of those characters. That's just a little taste of what you can expect over the course of the next 2 hours this morning as we visit with Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron. He joins us as our special guest co-host. We're going to get to a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our Acacia Courtney, who is over in Hong Kong, taking in the festivities of the big Grade 1 races coming up tomorrow. And then we're going to be joined by Barry Pearl right around 9 o'clock Eastern to tell you all about the Jockeys in Jeans charity event, which comes up at Gulfstream Park this year to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And Peter Ertin will be here at 9:30 Eastern time to tell us all about his major contender, Pacific Heat, in today's Grade 1 Starlet at Los Alamitos. It's all ahead on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Lane's End.
Adina Springs added Macho Uno's best son, Mucho Macho Man, to their stallion roster for the 2015 breeding season. And with 95% of his mares getting in foal, he certainly took to his new job well. Mucho Macho Man earned $5.6 million on the track, culminating in his thrilling victory in the 2013 Breeders' Cup Classic over Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
On the outside, Declaration of War, Will Take Charge. Mucho Macho Man just keeps on finding on the lead. Will Take Charge, a late drop. Oh, it's close. Mucho Macho Man, the more they asked, the more he gave.
Few horses can be multiple graded placed at two, run in all three legs of the Triple Crown, and then go on to become a Breeders' Cup Classic winner as an older horse. And all this from a foal born June 15th. Visit AdinaStallions.com to learn more about Mucho Macho Man and all the Adina Stallions.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Gulfstream Park hosts four stakes races totaling $400,000 in purses this Saturday, including the Grade 3 Rampart. Come out and enjoy breakfast at Gulfstream Saturday morning with special guests Gary Donahue of Irish Eye Stable and Sandy Levine, managing partner of Drawing Away Stables, as they teach you how to get in the game of racehorse ownership. Post time during the championship meet is 12:05 on Saturdays and 12:35 all other live racing days. For more information, visit GulfstreamPark.com. Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr. for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March on Chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com. Are you a believer?
But it will be Justin Philip to win the Vanderbilt by two.
Justin Philip retired sound following 32 lifetime starts, 23 of those coming in graded stakes, with nine buyer speed figures of 100 or better by the exciting young sire First Samurai and a half-brother to three other graded stakes winners, including Algorithms, Seeing is Believing, with Justin Philip at Castleton Lions. Are you a believer? Hashtag Justin's Believers. Start now with your Kale Density Mare and Foal Feeding Program. Sales results were obvious at this year's Keeneland September Yearling Sale. Yearlings produced from mares fed Kale Density through their formative year were impressive, as well as horses trained and raced in 2014 and so far in 2015. Clean radiographs, conformity, strong bones, and overall health was the big winner at auction and on the track. Order your plan today at KaleDensity.com or call 877-744-9006 for more information.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Bobby's Kitten, much closer to the front than he was at this stage a year ago. Has to swing wide, though, off the turn. Six lengths off the lead. Mongolian Saturday has the lead. Here comes Lady Shipman on the outside. Ready for Rye, drops back third. Bobby's Kitten, fourth. Green Mask is fifth. Mongolian Saturday with the lead, chased by Lady Shipman. Green Mask and Bobby's Kitten. Mongolian Saturday trying to hang tough. Lady Shipman and Green Mask. Mongolian Saturday hangs on by a head and pulls the upset. Lady Shipman had to settle for second in 1:03 2/5 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, special guest co-host, Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron. We are with you in our Lexington studios. And Mongolian Saturday, Kurt Becker with the call of that victory in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, a popular one for the Pontiff of the Pick Four. He was a big fan of Mongolian Saturday, and it would be a popular victory if he could pull off a win in Hong Kong tomorrow as well. How cool is that?
Yeah, he might get a little donation from me. He certainly doesn't owe me any money. You know, that's one of the reasons that I get up early Breeders' Cup week and Derby week to go clock the horses and see what's going on. He just blew out so well. Mongolian Saturday looked great. So,
well, people are familiar with the name Acacia Courtney because if they've been tuning into the Horse Racing Radio Network, she's been part of our team throughout the year, and that is going to continue in 2016, and she will be joining the Big A, Anthony Stabile, on Express Bet Radio each and every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon. She will start December 23rd in that role, but for now, she's enjoying her time in Hong Kong, getting ready for all those Grade 1 races tomorrow. And Acacia joins us now. Acacia, thanks for taking the time.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. How are you?
Things are good here. How are things in Hong Kong?
It's great. We're actually at dinner right now. They have the 12 of us, they call us the social media influencers, that have gotten to experience everything in Hong Kong this week. And it's basically everything that I could possibly imagine and more. I can't fathom any place like it. And, of course, this is actually my first time at a non-American track, but they know how to do racing over here. They really do.
Well, I understand you're kind of celebrity yourself. You got the paparazzi chasing you. I've seen bikini photos of you online. It's like it's insane, huh?
I do. I mean, we had the joke at Breeders' Cup that I was, I don't know if we had decided on a C-list or a Z-list celebrity, but one of those letters. But I'm not sure exactly what triggered it, but I have found myself in the local Hong Kong newspapers and media. The very first day that we were here, I was in the two most highly circulated media companies in Hong Kong. So they actually did put together a little video where they took some photos from my Facebook of my time at Miss America. And it's really funny to read the translations because they don't always translate perfectly. So yesterday's, I think they said something about me being on the radio, and the translation turned into American DJ and race presenter, Acacia Courtney. So I've got a lot of new titles.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned that the bikini photos, and all of a sudden our HRN Twitter feed just gained 10,000 followers in the last 30 seconds. People looking for those now,
well,
by the way.
That's a bit of an exaggeration.
I got the biggest kick out of it because, you know, you're really you never bring that up. You know, you're always, you know, kind of, hey, I'm doing racing. I'm not, you kind of shy. Once in a while, I tease you about it, even on the air. But most of the time, you're very cool about the fact that you know that you were Miss Connecticut and all that. You don't play that up. But it was like you were there for 5 minutes and they found out about it and just it went viral, as they say. It was so funny to me, but you know that they never missed a trick over there, so it's a pretty cool thing for you. I got a big kick out of it.
I did too. It's actually been really funny. Every morning we have a bus that'll take us from the hotel over to Sha Tin, one of the race courses in Hong Kong, where we get to watch the morning track work and see all the international horses out. And every morning on the bus, we usually end up reading the local Hong Kong newspapers to see what they're saying today and what kind of pictures they've got. And it's been really funny. Definitely really, really flattering.
Well, Acacia, I mentioned that Chris McCarron is sitting in with us here this morning. And one thing that we were just talking about before you came on was the All-Star Jockey Challenge that was hosted at Hong Kong just a few days ago. What can you tell me about that?
So that was at Happy Valley, which is the track that's basically right in the middle of the city, and they do racing at night, and it unfortunately poured buckets of rain the entire time that we were there. But we had a great time. Our group of social media people put together a big ticket, and we actually hit the equivalent of the pick six in Hong Kong, which they call the six up. And I've never hit a pick six before in my life. So to do that in Hong Kong, my first time ever betting, and just we had a lot of people, I guess it was some beginner's luck and some people that had bet on international races before, but it was so much fun to have that. And then they had four races for the Jockeys Challenge, and Gavin Lorena, a South African jockey, ended up winning that title with Ryan Moore, the last year's world's best jockey, being in close behind him. So it was really exciting to see how they do everything so differently. And it's random mounts for the jockeys there. They don't know really what to expect.
Yeah, I think all rides should be random. I think that would be a great deal. Jocks could make more money because they'd eliminate the agent, and you just luck of the draw. Then we'd really know who the best rider was if all the rides
were definitely
random.
It's definitely an interesting test, and especially that track is so small. The turns are so tight, and then the weather, the rain, just put another influence on it. So you really have to be on your toes, so to speak, and ready to go at any opportunity that presents itself.
Hi, Acacia. This is Chris. How are you?
Hi, Chris. I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you. A very good friend of mine, Hall of Fame trainer Jack Vanberg, he told me years ago that he would prefer to see robots on the horses, where the trainers could remote control these robots. What do you think about that, Acacia?
Well, I'd be really, really fascinated to see how that works. It was interesting because Victor Espinosa, American Pharoah's jockey, was participating in the challenge, and they asked him in one of the press conferences, you know, what are you doing to prepare? How do you think it's going to be? And his response was interesting. He said, it's all based on the horse. I don't know what I'm going to get. He said, there's only so much I can do. And if I have a great horse, obviously that makes my job easier. But so much of it depends on the kind of horse that you have. So I assume with robots, that'd be even more important.
That's for sure. It's always the horse. It truly is. I mean, the best jockey in the world cannot get a slow horse to run fast.
Right.
But a jockey that's not as skilled can certainly get the best horse beat, and that happens on many occasions.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally.
Yeah, and Courtney. Last night we had the world's best jockey gala where Frankie Dettori was awarded that, and they said basically that it's the jockey's job to pilot, and it's one of the most unbelievable positions that people don't realize how much it actually takes to go into being a jockey. And Frankie said he was lucky that he had some incredible mounts and some incredible people to work with this year. So really exciting to see him get that award.
Yeah, that was very well deserved. Before Frankie started riding, he was learning the trade over in England, getting on horses in the morning and stuff. But before he became a jockey, he went to Santa Anita two winters in a row working for John Gosden. And then he returned again after he became a jockey, an apprentice over in England, and worked a third winter. And that's the biggest reason why, it's the main reason why Frankie looks much more like an American rider. He's got much more of an American style than the European style. And there was a lot of influence on Frankie's early, the formative stages of his career because he was at Santa Anita Park in the wintertime.
Yeah, it was exciting to watch him, the replays again of some of his rides, most recently Golden Horn second at Breeders' Cup Turf, and then prior to that in the Arc, and watching the way he rides versus some of the other jockeys, and then, of course, his traditional flying dismount, if you will, where he really jumps off the back of the horse. They asked him to do that off the stage last night, but he was holding a very expensive trophy and opted to save that for when he's back on the track.
Did you ever try that, Chris?
Yeah, once. and only it was only once because I sprained my ankle.
Cordero used to do that every once in a while.
Yeah, Angel started that, I think. Mm. I don't know if anybody prior to Angel or before Angel ever tried it, but he was the master at it as well, yeah.
I won a race with Pedroza one time when he was a bug boy, and he did it. And I told Richie Silverstein, I said, tell him never, ever to do that again. If he does that in California, nobody will put him on a horse. I said, you know, one time, that's it, no more. He never did it again.
Wow.
So, Acacia Courtney joining us from
the hard way. You gotta take care of those body parts.
Yeah, Acacia Courtney joining us from Hong Kong here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Acacia, let's talk about some of the horses we can expect to see in the races tomorrow, and some of the Americans in particular.
Sure. Well, I heard the stretch call of Mongolian Saturday, who's going to be running in the sprints, and I have to say, I haven't really had the opportunity to see many of the Hong Kong local horses working in the morning, but I have gotten to see every day this week all of the international ones, including the Americans. And Mongolian Saturday is a quirky horse. He's really interesting. He'll come out, and he'll stand on the track, and he'll just kind of post up there and watch the other horses go by him. The first morning that I saw him, he stood there for about 15 minutes, not moving. Completely stationary, and he just stand and he'll watch and he'll take it all in. And whenever he's ready, his exercise rider will take him over and they'll start moving and they'll start going around the track. And even as he goes, you know, he shakes his head a bit. Sometimes they have to stop halfway through and let him look at the surroundings again and get comfortable. There are some cones, some orange cones on the turf that he is not really happy about at all. Yesterday, his rider had to hop off and hand walk him through. But once he starts going well. But he is definitely a quirky horse with a really, really strong mind. Green Mask is the other American who actually hasn't been working much this week because he was a bit lame. His left front hoof had a bruise, and he was out yesterday and the day before. And jockey Florent Giroux, who's going to be up on Mongolian Saturday for the races, but was working green mask the other day, said that he went really well when he brought him out Thursday morning, and the hoof is healing, but they're still being really, really gentle with it.
Well, the old saying, no hoof, no horse, you know. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually run him.
I actually liked the description that you gave us of the way Mongolian Saturday trains. And I learned a long time ago, watching the great John Henry, even well before I was able to get the mount on him, that, you know, John would stop. He'd leave Ron McAnally's barn, and he'd stop four or five, sometimes 10 times with Louis Senecola on his back. And he would just stop and look and take everything in. Mm-hmm. And so I surmised that a horse that does that is a lot more intelligent than your average horse. They mm-hmm. love being outside of their stall. They're confined at their stall 23 hours a day on average. So when they have the opportunity to get outside, they want to be out there for quite a while. Ali Sheba did it. John Henry did it. Tisnow did it. The thing is, those type of horses stand out because they're so good, they're allowed to do that. Whereas a claiming horse or just your average horse, the exercise rider doesn't allow the horse to take all that time because they have more horses to get on. You know, they have a lot of times they're freelance exercise riders and they're trying to ride as many as they possibly can, so they hurry the horse up. And I think it's a great trait, a good quality when a horse does that and wants to take in all the action when they're out there, especially if they stand still once they're on the track. And if they watch all the training and the horse is going by like that, to me that's a sign of a horse with great intelligence and lots of confidence in himself.
Well, Acacia, we know you've got
I'm sorry, Mike.
No, I was going to say, I know you've got a lot of things
I would definitely agree with that. Whenever he comes out, everybody kind of crowds around to see. And I think there was actually even a little bit of a wager for how long he would really stand there. And it's gotten progressively less as the week has gone on, but you can see him just looking and getting some love and taking it all in. And I'm anxious to see him run tomorrow.
Acacia Courtney live from Hong Kong here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, she joins the Big A, Anthony Stabile. It'll be the Big A and the Little A on Express Bet Radio every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And that all comes up December 23rd. Acacia, appreciate the time. Go enjoy your dinner. Enjoy the festivities with the races tomorrow and safe travels back home. We'll talk to you next week.
I certainly will. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to see you back stateside.
All right, Acacia Courtney here on HRRN. We're going to get to another commercial break. Typically the time when we would bring you our Lexus Legends of the Turf story, but in deference to our special guest co-host this morning and wanting to spend a little more time talking with Chris McCarron, we're going to bypass the Legends of the Turf story. We will have a commercial for the Lexus store of Lexington and a short commercial break, and we're back with more here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Here comes Flame!
A photo finish that Blaine got!
6 graded stakes wins, 3 grade 1 victories, 9 consecutive 100-plus buyers. And now, Blaine has sired graded stakes quality from his first crop. His first runners are stars at tracks across the country.
It's far from over with a terrific performance!
Eclipse champion Blaine at Claiborne Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Power.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Passion.
And Bodie Meister is turning the Arkansas Derby into an absolute romp.
Performance.
And Pioneer of the Nile and Garrick Gomez have won the Santa Anita Derby.
Gainesway Stallion Empire Maker has produced 11 Grade 1 winners, including two-time Breeders' Cup Distaff winner, multiple Eclipse champion, and six-time Grade 1 winner, Royal Delta. Other Grade 1 winners by Empire Maker include Emollient, In Lingerie, Country Star, Mushka, Acoma, Icon Project, Last Full Measure, and Grace Hall. The heir of Mr. Prospector's best classic line, Empire Maker, boasts an impeccable pedigree. Out of Broodmare of the Year, Tussauds.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Airdrie Stud is proud to introduce Summer Front for the 2016 breeding season.
Summer Front! And Joe Bravo have won!
A multiple graded stakes winning millionaire by the Great War Front, Summer Front began his career as an undefeated multiple stakes winner at 2 before going on to win graded stakes at 3, 4, and 5. Boasting a top-class pedigree and the jaw-dropping looks that made him a $475,000 sales horse. The explosiveness, the looks, and the pedigree to be a truly important sire. Airdrie Stud's Summer Front. Think about it.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're at the top of the stretch, and John Henry still has a lead by a head. Wynn on the outside, second by 2. All along is third, then Majesty's Prince. John Henry looking great past the 8th pole, lead still by a head. Wynn on the outside, won't give up, goes right alongside in second. 3 to the mare, all along, then Majesty's Prince. John Henry on the rail, still has a lead. Wynn on the outside, second. John Henry in front. It's John Henry, an outstanding gelding, the winner, with Chris McCarron by about a neck. Then Wynn was second, about 5, back to a photo between all along. And Majesty's Prince in this the 8th race, Turf Classic. Time for the race, extremely fast. 2 minutes, 25, and 1/5 seconds.
No, just one of so many memorable moments and big wins in the career of Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron, the great John Henry, winning the 1984 Turf Classic in New York. And boy, what a horse he was. And as you heard there in the call, Chris McCarron aboard that day, as he was so many times with John Henry, and he's aboard here on the Equine Forum this morning as well. Boy, what a performance that day, huh?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was his next to last career start. And he was such an amazing horse, and I never knew anyway. I rode him the last 14 starts of his career. He had 17 different jockeys throughout his whole career.
Wow.
So, and just about everybody won on him. So he was, you know, Jude could have won on him. For fun.
Let's not push it.
No. If he could carry the weight.
Yeah. Well, you were a little bit lighter back then, too.
Yeah, so. I was a little bit lighter. Not that much lighter, but a little bit.
You sent out that great tweet yesterday. I had commented on Chris McCarron, how when I first got into racing, you were among my favorite jockeys by far. And I said, it's going to be pretty cool to sit here and have Chris co-host the program with us today.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Absolutely. And you sent out that great tweet that Chris was so good that he even won for you when you were training.
That's right. Well, we had a few victories. Peter Gray was a horse that I had claimed for $20,000, and he won my first graded stakes, my first 100 grander at Santa Anita, and Chris had ridden him before, and Chris won on him, I think, twice, but you weren't exactly enamored with the horse. You weren't always enamored with my horses. One of the great Chris McCarron lines that I've never forgotten is one day he rode a filly for me, first-time starter, and I don't know, she ran middle of the pack or something, and it was the last race. He was probably tired, and came back, and I said, well, what do you think? He goes, I'm not calling my dad and telling him what a great horse I rode for Jude Fell today.
You got to let him down easy. You know? I know some people who come back and say, Jude, this is a piece of...
Yeah. That was a classic line. And, you know, but he rode Peter Gray and he won an allowance race.
Yeah.
And he came back and he said, well, you know, the horse ran all right. He says, I think next time you should run him for 40 or 50. He was always, you know, wanting to run him where they could win. He wanted to be the leading rider all the time. And he could give you a suggestion where you might want to place him the next time, right? So the next time I ran him, I think Shu ended up riding him. You obviously had told Scott, yeah, that horse is okay, but he's not that much. So Shu rode him, and he ran second. Lee Rossi had a horse in the race that you might have actually ridden that bit Peter Gray on the ass, and he took off with Bill around the turn and just like took off, and we got beat like a head or something, and Bill came back and he goes, I don't know what happened. He said, and I'm dying laughing. I'm cracking up. I said, that he got bit on the ass going in the first turn. And Bill goes, no. I said, go watch the film. This horse takes a chunk out of his butt and he just took off with Shoe. So now the stakes coming up, and my first 100 grander, Shoe's got to ride one for Charlie. You're riding one, I think, for maybe John Russell. And so I had Dalhousie ride, and he goes wire to wire and wins the 100 grander. And so first guy at my barn the next morning, Chris. Chris comes out, and he says, I can't believe I told you to run that horse for 50. First guy at the barn in the morning was Chris.
And I got a similar story to that, Jude. I was on a horse that broke his maiden for Chuck Marikian, very nice gray horse called Swing Till Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
And he broke his maiden for 50, claiming. And so after the race, Chuck is excited, you know, how ebullient he would get after winning the race and stuff. He's all jacked up. And where do you think I should run him next? And I said, well, this is maiden 50. You know, you should probably run him back for 40, open 40, you know. That's probably about where he's going to fit. But talk to my agent. He knows more about that than I do. And so he ran him back in allowance race, and I did not ride him. And he won. So I went to the barn the next day, same thing. I said, man, I sure judged that horse wrong. Well, that horse, P-Val, won the Stroob on him, and Craig Perrette won the Widener on him.
Well, that was a bad weekend for Chris, because I'll tell you why. Pewter Gray won the Sierra Nevada, which was on Saturday, right? And you mentioned how Chuck Marikian would get all fired up. Chuck Marikian actually ran to my box. Our boxes were close, and picked me up off the ground after that. He was so happy for me. He literally picked me up. Chuck was a big guy. He played for Fresno State. And he picked me up off the ground. And this is the greatest thing. The very next day was the day that Swing Till Dawn won the Stroob. Because the Sierra Nevada was a straight four-year-old stakes race on the turf. And the Stroob was the next day on Sunday was on the dirt. So they ran the four-year-olds. Mr. Kilroy used to like to do that, you know, keep the groups together, and then down the road they could run back again at the same time. So, that was a bad weekend for you handicapping-wise.
I got one more similar story. I was on a first-time starter filly for Ron McAnally one day, and Lucas had the favorite in the race. So Wayne goes over to my agent Scotty and says, what does your jock think about this filly that he's riding for Ronnie in there? He says, well, he really likes her, but he thinks she'll probably need a race. You know, he's been breezing her in the morning. She's breezing like she's got some talent, but he thinks she might be a little short. Well, my filly, so Wayne went to the window and bet on his filly. And so my filly wins by 4, and Wayne was second. So Wayne waltzes over to my agent right after the race on the way before he went down to the track and said, hey, you tell your jock, if Santa Anita ever decides to put one of those statues out there, you know, with Shoemaker and Pinkai, it's going to be on the side of the jockey, not on the other side where Whittingham is. Tell him to stick to riding, not trying to figure out how to be a trainer. So I ended up getting the last laugh, because in 2004, Santa Anita unveiled a bust of Chris McCarron right alongside of Shoemaker and Pink Eye and John Longdon. And so I went to Wayne. I said, Charlie's still by himself over there with his dog, Ferdinand.
That's right. Yeah, the dog.
How great is that? I'll give you my favorite Chris McCarron story. And as I mentioned, when I first got interested in racing, Chris, you were one of the guys that I thought, man, this guy is just incredible. You quickly became among my favorite jockeys very, very quickly. And when I was working with Thoroughbred Times back in the mid-90s or so, I think it was around 96, 97, I went out to California. They sent you out there for training, right? And I made my first trip to Santa Anita, and I was just in awe. I saw the San Gabriel Mountains. I said, this place is so cool. The one thing I wanted to do was get a chance to meet Chris McCarron. And I went over. I found my way to where the jocks room is at Santa Anita out by the paddock. And I can remember being so nervous when I asked somebody if you were in there. And then they said, yeah. And Chris, you came out, and you spent, I don't know, maybe it was 5 minutes talking with me. And I said, hey, I'm a native of Massachusetts, just like you. And you were so kind to take the time to talk with me. And those are some of the things that, like, that's one thing I'm never going to forget. And I think that when you talk about jockeys leaving an impression on young fans in this sport, things like that go a long way toward developing a fan base. And again, thank you. That's something I'm never going to forget. And, you know, I tip my hat to you, my friend.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. I find it easy to be friendly. My father was a very, very friendly, outgoing person. My mom was very quiet, but they raised nine of us the hard way, and I like to think that we were raised the right way, and very basic principle: treat people the way you want to be treated, you know. And I learned early on in my career when I was riding in Maryland, because I had so much great success right off the bat, I learned how important the fan base is. And even when I moved out west in 1978, I would have people come up to me and say, hey, we just got in town. We go to the races at Bowie all the time, or Laurel or Pimlico, and this is my son, Johnny, whatever his name is, you know, and I just want to say thanks. You signed his program the day that you broke Sandy Hawley's record, and this young man he'll be a fan for life. So those little things, those experiences for me, really hit home and tell me how incredibly important it is to generate interest and to maintain interest in these people's minds about our great sport.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I had no idea what I was going to say to Chris McCarron, and I was so nervous when he came walking out. I couldn't believe I was standing there talking with Chris McCarron, and you never once made me feel like somebody that didn't belong there. And that's the image that's still in my head. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I think that's so important. When you had your academy, was that one of the areas that you tried to focus on with young jockeys and say, hey, you know, you have an obligation to this sport on certain levels like that?
Yeah, without question. And it's easy to get through and impress that particular philosophy upon the kids that are outgoing, you know, like a Jackie Davis, for instance. She's incredibly vivacious, and she's on fire, by the way, right now. She won two days ago at Aqueduct. She won another one yesterday. And the two days ago, they were both the longest shots on the board. They both went wire to wire, and she never even thought about cocking her stick on either one of them. One of them paid $90, I think. Anyway, the kids who, getting back to the school, get the kids who are sort of introverted, it's hard to get them to participate in selling the sport, you know, to participate in trying to shed really good positive light on a jockey and a jockey's career. But the ones that are outgoing, they take to it like a duck to water.
I always thought that was one of your strong suits, is, you know, you made an effort to know the owners and to speak to them in the paddock and, you know, acknowledge them as human beings, you know, instead of just somebody that owns a horse that you're going to ride. You know, I think you always had that graciousness about you. I remember the first time I met you, I was wearing a Boston College hat, and you saw it, and you asked me if I'd gone to Boston College, and I kind of giggled. I'd never even been to Boston. But I Jeff Tufts had run a basketball pool, and Boston College got me the money. I think I won $1,000 in the pool, so I went to the mall and bought myself a Boston College hat. I thought it was the least I could do.
BC Eagles, same colors as USC.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so, now I guess, you know, you could say time changes people. I mentioned that experience I had with Chris all those years ago, mm-hmm. and then today he knows he's going to be a co-host on our show, and he walks into our studio wearing a New England Patriots t-shirt.
That's right.
So, yeah. You know.
You got your Steelers sweatshirt on.
You knew I was going
to. I knew you were going to be wearing the Steelers stuff.
I wear Steelers stuff like every day.
And me being Swiss, I went neutral with a Hawaiian shirt.
And you guys are what, 8-4?
What no, 7-5.
Oh, excuse me.
7-5. We're 8-5 after tomorrow.
We're 10-2.
Yeah, I know.
We'll be 11-2 after tomorrow night.
I'm clear. I'm clear.
We got to play the Bungles tomorrow.
Getting back to John Henry for a second, the second to last start, as you heard on that call, he went wire to wire in the Turf Classic at Belmont, and he beat a New York bred, a horse called Wynn, by a neck, and seemed to be all out doing it, and it was a weight for age race. They all carried 126 pounds, equal weights. And his next start was in the Ballantyne's Classic, going 1 3/8. The Turf Classic was 1.5 miles, as you know, and he ran fast, 2:25. And the next start, his last start, was going to be the 1 3/8 Ballantyne's Classic. And I remember the agents telling, you know, I could overhear some agents talking, well, we've got the old man now. He's going to carry 128 pounds, and he's going to spot these other horses a lot of weight because it was a handicap. And so John goes from winning wire to wire to going over to the Meadowlands 3 weeks later, and came from next to last. And he was just I never knew exactly how he was going to run the first part of the race. He was a horse that had speed, but he didn't always use it. As a matter of fact, he won a stake sprinting as a 2-year-old. He won the Jean Lafitte Futurity at Evangeline Downs when he was a baby. So he was amazing. He could do anything, run on dirt, turf. When I got the mount on him in 1983, He was an 8-year-old, and he went on to earn $6.5 million in his career, and he earned 2.3 of that as a 9-year-old. He earned a third amazing. Of his total career earnings in 1 year, in his last year.
Yeah, amazing.
That'll never be equaled.
No, just absolutely
he was awesome.
Amazing. Yeah,
an awesome horse.
All right, we're going to get to another commercial break here. Before we do, we want to remind you that as a 13-time leading stud farm, Lane's End has a proven track record of turning young stallions into leading sires, like The Factor, for example, the top freshman sire by yearling average that's 15 times his stud fee, or Union Rags, a grade one winning 2-year-old and classic winning 3-year-old who became the leading freshman sire by weanling average in 2014 and whose first yearlings realized up to $460,000. Then there's Twirling Candy, 2015's leading freshman sire by winners and 2-year-old average, and Quality Road, the leading first crop sire by earnings and graded stakes winners in 2014. So when it comes down to it, Lane's End stallions are made for success. To learn more about breeding opportunities, visit lanesend.com. And keep in mind the announcement coming out this week, Tonalist now joining the stallion roster at Lane's End. He'll be an amazing addition for sure. We'll get to a break. We'll come back and get you set for a very busy second half of the program right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events. I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair Strips. FlairStrips.com.
Introducing the Spendthrift for 2016 Palace, the multiple grade one winning millionaire and fastest son of leading sire City Zip. Palace proved to be a leading sprinter in North America in 2014 and 2015, winning such New York staples as the grade one Forgo Stakes, grade one Vanderbilt Stakes, and grade two True North Stakes. Palace is set to retire at season's end to Spendthrift. For more information on Palace, call us toll free at 888-816-8787. That's 888-816-8787.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is the finest premium Western Timothy and alfalfa, direct from Washington State. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in Central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Learn more by following Washington Hay Company on Facebook today.
Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick 4. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, inviting you to join me for Express Bet Radio on HRRN. Tune in for live racing action from around the country every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. It's the place to be on your drive home, through the final furlong of your workday, and for all fans of the sport of kings. It's Express Bet Radio on HRRN on Sirius 220, XM 206, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net.
Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And we're going to kick things off with trainer Graham Motion, Hall of Fame trainer Phil Mott here on Trainer Talk. Roger Atfield is going to be with us for the next half an hour. Carl Nasker, an honor to have him on the show tonight. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahey, nice enough to spend some time with us. I want to welcome Hall of Famer Bob Baffert to the program.
Trainer Talk, the biggest names in horse racing. Wednesdays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And always streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As they get to the 3/8 pole, followed next by Fire the Groom. In between horses is La Caldoon, being followed out wide by Flawlessly and Camp and Yard and Shartar, and further back Reluctant Guest as they pack up. Key Carla running a giant race, moves up with Countess in. Castroma is 3 wide on the turn for home. A length further back is Flawlessly and Fire the Groom, searching for room near the rail. Castroma, Flawlessly make their runs together. They hit the front with a 16th to go. Flawlessly takes the lead from Castroma. On the rail, Fire the Groom, but Flawlessly is clear on the matriarch, and Flawlessly goes on for a great win.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington studios. Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron sitting in with us, and a really fun first half of the program. That call, Flawlessly winning the 1991 Matriarch, yet another graded stakes winner, piloted to victory by Chris McCarron. And Flawlessly was about, well, she was as flawless as they get. She was so sensational. And Chris, I remember falling in love with her. She was tremendous.
I got another great story about her. At least I think it's great. She was as sweet as she was talented. I mean, she'd be laying down in her stall. You could go in her stall and sit on her back and reach down and feed her carrots or mints at the same time. And she'd just blink, and if she could smile, she'd be smiling. The first time I rode her was in a stake at Del Mar, and she felt horrible getting across the ground. Jude, you used to watch her train, and
you wouldn't think she was a plow horse or something.
When she galloped, she never reached out. Yeah. She didn't have a very long stride at the gallop, and her toes would just jam in the ground.
That all changed in the afternoons.
It did. Well, it actually changed when she breezed too.
Wow.
I mean, she just had this very sloppy and very lazy way of going. You know, it wasn't that she was sore. It's just that she didn't have a very pretty stride. You know, she looked like she was hitting the ground with a ton of bricks. And so she won that day that I rode her. And I came back and told my agent, I said, man, I said that this filly can really run, but I don't know how much longer she's going to be around. She doesn't hit the ground very well, you know? Well, all she did was race until she was 7. Charlie Whiting. Charlie would run her like four times a year, and she won 9 graded stakes, and she was just as sweet as can be. And she was raised by John Williams, Benny Williams' husband.
Yeah.
And she actually retired at their place in Versailles. And John's a very, very good horseman, and we always talk about Flawlessly with a great amount of passion and love for that mare. She won 2 years in a row. She won the Beverly Hills. She won the it's now the maybe on the grass. It was the Ramona back then.
Right. Yep.
A mile and eighth grade one on the grass at Del Mar, and then she won the Matriarch. 2 years in a row, she won all 3 of those grade one stakes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
She was special.
She was something else. And when I first moved to Kentucky, my friend Chris Hall was working for the Williams, and I used to take Flawlessly her dinner. She was like in a paddock. There was another mare that Laz Barrera trained. I want to say adored maybe, but they used to be like paddock mates, and I would take them there. Dinner when I'd go pick Chris up at the farm in the evening, and I kind of requested that job to go take them their feed, and it was I would just stand there and look at them, you know. I mean, Flawlessly, I saw her race probably every time that she ran. I saw her, and because I never missed a day at the track. I mean, never. And you know, she was just, like Chris said, I mean, you'd watch her in the morning and you go, good Lord, you know, but she was just so cool. And those two old gals, they probably had millions of earnings between the two of them. And it was just a great moment every night. It was something that really made me fall in love with Kentucky and, you know, just being there with those two great mares.
And yeah. There was one of those stakes, one of those grade ones at Hollywood. Did you train Steph Graf?
I did.
Yeah. Remember the day that she wouldn't load?
Yeah, that was kind of her habit.
Yeah, yeah. She refused to go in. They eventually got her loaded, but I was number 4 that day, and I think it was only a 4 or 5 horse field, and your mare just didn't want to go in the gate, and it took them like 4 or 5, maybe 6 minutes to get her in there, and so the other fillies and mares they're kind of getting a little anxious, a little antsy, you know, and Flawlessly, she just, you know, after about a minute or so, less than a minute, she just cocked that right hind leg or left hind leg. You know how when a horse is very relaxed and they just put all their weight on in the one leg behind? That's exactly what she did. She's like, come on, let's get this over with. This is just a formality.
Well, so much fun to look back on some of the top moments in Chris's career and some of the top horses as well. We're going to continue to do that in the second half of the program. Also going to be joined right after this short break by Barry Pearl, who was with the Jockeys and Jeans fundraising event to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. We'll talk to him about that event, which comes up February 28th at Gulfstream Park. And then Peter Urton is going to be with us at 9:30 Eastern Time to tell you all about his, well, morning line favorite, Pacific Heat, in today's Grade 1 Starlet at Los Alamitos. It's all next, second half of the Equine Forum, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End.
The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Songbird is just rolling past the eighth pole, has the lead by 6. Rachel Valentina is in second, but there is absolutely no stopping Songbird.
Beholder, once again, is just making this look so easy. It is Beholder in an absolute canter, being geared down late by Gary Stevens. Beholder in a formality.
Stop Charging Maria, short lead. Stellar Wind is fighting on. Stop Charging Maria just keeps battling back. Stop Charging Maria wins the Longines Breeders' Cup Distaff.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
And welcome back, hour number two, the Equine Forum, rolling on a busy morning here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. A balmy Saturday with temperatures in the mid-60s on the 12th day of December. Kind of hard to believe. They're actually calling for a record 70 degrees here in Lexington, Kentucky tomorrow. So, boy, no reason to break out the jackets just yet as we edge closer to Christmas and to the new year. And want to invite everybody to go to our website, horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion of this program, go there, check out the podcast. It will be available for you shortly after 10 o'clock Eastern time when we go off the air. Mike Penna and Jude Feld, we are the Baron and the Pontiff, and Chris McCarron, Hall of Famer, a winner of more than 7,000 races in that Hall of Fame career, sitting in as our
professor.
Guest co-host. We're going to go with the professor.
Self-acclaimed.
There you go.
I just wish he was a better dresser.
Self-proclaimed. I should say self-proclaimed.
Well, one organization or one entity, Chris, that you are extremely passionate about supporting is the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And there's an event coming up at Gulfstream Park on February 28th. Horse Racing Radio Network is a huge supporter of PDJF. It's our official charity. And we are a sponsor of the Jockeys in Jeans event, which Barry Pearl is in the process of putting together right now. And Barry joins us from Florida to talk about that outstanding event and a great fundraiser for the PDJF. Barry, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Mike. Hello, Mike, Chris, Jude.
How you doing? How you doing, morning. Barry? Long time no talk.
Yeah, I think just the other day.
Yeah,
I hear your weather up there is quite a bit like what we're enjoying here in Florida.
Yes, it's pretty warm outside, and it's a little humid. Like Mike was saying, it's balmy. It's supposed to get to be around 70, 72 today, and that's crazy for December 12th.
That is pretty crazy. You're right.
20 degrees higher than normal.
Wow, that is something. Well, it's going to be 80 here in Florida, so I can understand that. Let me start, if I may, by giving a little background of Jockeys in Jeans to your audience, and I think would shine a light on what we are doing and what we're trying to accomplish. Jockeys in Jeans was formed by five former riders who actually was going to get together for a little reunion. And with the help of Eddie Donnelly, the Reverend Eddie Donnelly, that turned into a charity event. And what we decided, well, we're going to get together, maybe we can do some good, and we can funnel some money over to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund and see how we work out. So we had 5 weeks to put this together, and none of us, except for maybe Eddie, was involved in any charity work as far as that goes. But we had the help of Nancy LaSala from the PDJF. And in 5 weeks, we made $23,000 for the PDJF, which was a pretty huge endeavor. We learned a lot. We also met the folks from Indiana Grand, who invited us to come up to Indiana Grand for our second event. And that event, with their help and their guidance, and folks like Chris and Walter Blum, William Bolin, Cougay, and countless others. Johnny Rotz was there. Jack Fires, Early Fires. I mean, the list goes on and on. Pat Day.
Georgie Velasquez.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Wow. So it was a huge, huge call to the riders, and they just came out in droves and helped us raise, ready for this, $205,000.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
so
huge.
We went from $23,000 to $205,000. The second year, which was pretty big.
I'd say you learned a few things from that first event.
Yeah, I learned how to get on the phone and just keep calling until I couldn't stand it anymore. That's what we learned. It's been fun, and our kind of motto is we are the lucky ones. We walked away intact, and we will never forget our brothers and sisters who did not. And I think we all mean that to the heart, and it's important. And I had a career in racing, and walked away from this thing without any damage. And so I wanted to give back to the folks who, you know, to the game, that was good to me. I don't know if you folks know, but Chris is one of our ambassadors. He has had that position since early summer, and he's kind of our spokesman out there in the world, in the Kentucky area and in different places. So thanks, Chris.
Hey, you bet, Barry. I just want to share with the audience and with Mike and this other guy over here. What's your name again? Pontiff?
Pope Jude.
Yeah. One of the founders of Jockeys and Jeans is Barbara Jo Rubin. And Barbara Jo was going to be the first lady ever to ride in a race. She wasn't the first licensed jockey. That privilege went to Kathy Kuzner, who went to court back in 1968, I believe it was, maybe 67, to fight for the right to be licensed as a jockey because the men didn't think that the women should be out there on the track. And she won that in court. She won that case in court, but she ended up breaking a leg in a jumping accident. She was a show jumper, and so she didn't get to hold the distinction of becoming the first girl ever to ride, and neither did Barbara Jo. Barbara Jo was all set to ride a horse, I want to say at Tropical Park, for Brian Webb, and the jocks wouldn't leave the room. They boycotted the race, so they had to take her. She had to take off the horse in order for that race to be run. And then Diane Crump actually became the first girl to ride in a race, but Barbara Jo became the first woman to win a race. And she's been very much involved with horses her whole life. And she is one of the founders with Barry and Darryl Brown. And who else besides Eddie?
Well, we have obviously Darryl Brown, his wife Maureen Brown. We have Eddie Donnelly, the Reverend Eddie Donnelly. We have Gordy Gubin, Barbara's husband, Barbara Jo Rubin. And we have Benjamin Pearl, my son, who's kind of our financial advisor because he's a CPA. And we have we brought aboard Mandy Menger from the Daily Racing Forum and Karen Cole, a young lady from Ohio, who was so interested in our event and came to the Indiana event, was just like really excited, and she wanted to do whatever she could to help. So we brought her on as a guest committee member for the year.
And let me toot your horn a little bit more here, Barry. not only did they raise 10 times the amount of money over the previous year, Indiana Grand benefited as well. They had an increase of somewhere between 450 and 500 attendees in the dining room because of this event, and their handle that night went up 100% over the same night the previous year.
Wow.
So Indiana Grand was, and I got to toot their horn as well, they were incredibly generous. The live auction went really, really well. There's a lady who works for Centaur Gaming who owns Indiana Grand, and she ponied up $31,000 for a beautiful painting of Steve Cawthon, Lafitte, and yours truly. And so that was the lion's share of the money that was raised that night. But they brought in these professional auctioneers who provided their services gratis. There was a lot of generosity going around the room that night and in the days leading up to that event. And I got to take my hat off to you, Barry. You guys did a wonderful job.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It was a team effort, truly, because we had a great team. And one person I must mention that was part of the team is no longer with us, was Mike Maganello and Kitty. Mike is an old friend of mine, and he's just got a very, very busy schedule, so he and Kitty had moved on to other things. But Mike was a big part of our group and one of the founding members. I want to, you know, let folks know that.
Well, Barry, as I mentioned, the event this year will take place on February 28th at Gulfstream in Hallandale Beach, Florida. Tell me about what folks can expect when they come out to this year's event.
This year is going to be just unbelievable. We really feel that. Gulfstream is an astronauts group has been really, really great. This is a new thing for them because you know, this is a big deal. We asked them for a lot in the way of financial assistance with the big luncheon we have and the room and all that, and they stepped up to the plate. So it's really, really great. We'll be doing it in the Sporting Kings room, which is where they hold the Eclipse Award, which is a beautiful room at the track. It's unbelievable, man. It's really, really neat. And we're going to have an auction, obviously, a silent and a regular auction. And Fassie Tipton, they're going to supply the auctioneer. So we expect that to go very, very well. We're also now in the process of collecting items for our auction. We have a number of American Pharoah photographs that were autographed by Victor, and they'll be framed and will go up for sale. And we should have, hopefully we'll have about 60 to 70 items between our regular auction or silent auction, which will be pretty neat. We're also going to do something really different this year. Fassie Tipton and Gulfstream Instronics has agreed to let us go out to farms and have donations of stallion shares. Fassie Tipton's going to sell them for us.
Oh, cool.
So that could be a whole new deal for us and possibly a really great way to raise funds.
Well, Barry, we're proud to be a supporter. As I mentioned, the PDJF is our official charity here on the network. We have a show every Tuesday night that folks can tune into at 6 o'clock Eastern, which is called Jock Talk, and a portion of the proceeds are given back to benefit PDJF. And we want to thank Tito's Handmade Vodka for their support of that show. They're the title sponsor, and they do an awful lot to benefit disabled riders as well. And I know you're working your tail off down there, and I can't wait to be part of that event on February 28th.
And let me tell you, Mike, we really appreciate the Horse Racing Radio Network coming on board as a major sponsor for Jockeys and Jeans. You folks have put a lot of time, a lot of effort, and I know a lot of resources into this, and we certainly appreciate it, and we hope to have a long and lasting relationship with you.
And I've got one other thing I want to mention before Barry goes. Barry and I were talking about this on the phone the other day. They're having an event at Gulfstream on January 3rd. Where Mike Strait, who is one of my graduates, was paralyzed in a racing accident in Arlington Park a few years ago, is going to be walking down through, I said that, he's walking down through the tunnel at Gulfstream out into the walking ring wearing his new exoskeleton. He's part of the ReWalk program down at the University of Miami project, and as well as a hospital in Orlando. So I'm going down there to participate in that. I can't wait to see it in person. You know, I've seen videos of it and so forth. But the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has been very supportive of Mike and all the other, the 59 other permanently disabled jockeys that the fund assists on a monthly basis. And so I'd just like to ask anybody who is involved in racing, anybody who supports racing, anybody who respects and admires jockeys, to possibly think about making a Christmas gift to the PDJF on behalf of Mike Penna and this show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And I know it'll make you feel really good inside.
Absolutely. That's great. And I'll be down there too, Chris, as I said. I'll be coming down for that. I want to see that. And Mike's going to be at our event. He's one of our honored guests. Just to let you know, Mike Strait, Jack Fires, Ann Von Rose, and Tad Leggett are all four of our honored guests. We're also having Randy Romero, who will be one of our honored guests too. So the list is growing, and it's going to be fun.
All right.
Barry Pearl with Jockeys and Jeans joining us here on the Equine Forum presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'll encourage you to support that event and the PDJF by going to jockeysandjeans.com. That's jockeysandjeans.com. You can learn all about the event on February 28th at Gulfstream, and you can help out and make your donation there as well. And sponsorship opportunities are still available, so make sure you inquire about those if you're interested in supporting an amazing event and an amazing cause. Barry, really do appreciate all the time and all the support, and we'll look forward to catching up with you soon, my friend.
Thanks, fellas. Good talking.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
And Barry Pearl, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It's the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and you can embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com.
There you go.
I'm wearing my Embrace the Race cap today, by the way, with the HRN logo on the side.
Best caps in the world.
Yeah. They are.
They really are.
All their products are
amazing. I was reading a text a few minutes ago. Did you give out the website for PDJF?
PDJF.org.
Right. If anybody wants to make a contribution as a nice Christmas gift, PDJF.org, Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, it would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and a tax-deductible donation.
Absolutely.
That. Yeah. A lot of people will be looking for those tax deductions coming up as well, and what a great way to do it by supporting an event like PDJF. Going to continue this second half of the program. Pete Erton is getting ready to join us at 9:30 Eastern. He, of course, the trainer of morning line favorite Pacific Heat in today's Grade 1 Starlet Stakes out at Los Alamitos. We'll get to that in a moment, but first, time now for your Blood Horse news update. And let's look at some of the top headlines brought to you by BloodHorse.com. Pete Aiello, the new race caller at Oaklawn. Less than 48 hours after finding out they needed him, Oaklawn Park has hired its fifth announcer. Pete Aiello will be in the booth when Oaklawn opens for live racing January 15th, replacing Frank Miramati, who departed for Santa Anita. According to Director of Racing David Longinati, Aiello was selected after announcers from the four corners of the continental United States expressed a desire to call races at the winter track. And Ben's Cat to be given a little bit of a rest. He'll be back in 2016. Hall of Fame trainer King Leatherberry reported December 10th that his 9-year-old multiple graded stakes winner Ben's Cat will get the winter off following his 7th place finish November 24th in the Fabulous Strike Handicap at Penn National Racecourse. For more news and headlines and updates on the industry, just head on over to BloodHorse.com. You know, we talked about John Henry and how spectacular he was as he got older, but how about Ben's Cat? He just keeps showing up and keeps doing his thing, and he's going to come back again as a 10-year-old next year.
Yeah, he's an amazing animal and certainly one of the biggest fan favorites our sport has. I mean, people stop what they're doing to watch Ben's Cat run.
And this is not the first time King Leatherberry has done this with a horse, taking him this far into a career. At this age, back in the 70s and early 80s, King had a horse in Maryland called Port Conway Lane. And I remember he beat a horse called True Knight in the John B. Campbell Handicap. I think Port Conway Lane might have been a four-year-old at the time. But that horse went on to win 50 races.
Wow.
He won 50. He raced till he was 13. 12 was the maximum age in Maryland. But in West Virginia back then, I don't know what it is now, but back then they could race a horse until they were 13. And Port Conway Lane won 50 races, and King saddled him in most of those.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. Chris McCarron, our special guest co-host this morning on the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End. And don't forget, you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and of course you can always check out our website, horseracingradio.net. We told you at the top of the show that listeners in more than 160 countries have made us their home for live racing coverage this year. Make sure you do the same by going to horseracingradio.net. JT, want to throw in a plug for something we broke the news on last week on this program. We are now just 56 days away from the debut of Saturdays at Gulfstream here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We came up with the concept this past summer when we partnered with NYRA to bring you Saturdays at Saratoga. Those broadcasts were so popular every single Saturday, we decided to partner with Gulfstream and do the same thing. And so every Saturday, beginning February 6th through the Florida Derby on April 2nd, we will be live from Gulfstream Park to broadcast all of their major stakes races during the championship meet. And we kick it off with the Don Handicap on February 6th. How about that?
Yeah, what a way to start, huh? What do you do from there?
I mean, you guys Florida stay down Derby. There the whole time, or do you go back and forth?
We actually are going to stay down there.
Good
it's going to be really nice.
You got an extra room?
I don't know. Yes. We didn't get in our place. We drove by.
Oh, maybe not. We got a couch.
we drove by. We went into the complex where we're going to stay and everything. It was pretty nice. Looking forward to that. But
so no more Hampton Inn?
No more Hampton. No, we were at the Hampton Inn last time, though. Well, we were down there last weekend.
We stay there when we're not going to be on extended stay.
Yeah. But
it's like home. We know everybody there.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Very cozy.
Do I get paid for that plug?
But
what plug?
Hampton Inn.
We don't even get paid. We
don't get. You got to talk to Andy Serling now. He's a resident.
But
over
you
there,
plug them, so you should be getting something.
That's right. We'll send him a little clip and say, "Hey, here's an invoice too."
Yeah.
We'll see if it works. All right. Well, I mentioned Peter Ertin getting ready to join us in just about 5 minutes from right now. He is in California getting ready to saddle the morning line favorite in today's Grade 1 starlet. That is Pacific Heat. We'll talk to him about his sensational undefeated filly in just a few moments. But before we get to the break, we want to remind you that as a 13-time leading stud farm, Lane's End has a proven track record of turning young stallions into leading sires, like The Factor, the top freshman sire by a yearling average that's 15 times his stud fee, or Union Rags, a Grade 1 winning 2-year-old and Classic winning 3-year-old who became the leading freshman sire by weanling average in 2014 and whose first yearlings realized up to $460,000. Then there's Twirling Candy, 2015's leading freshman sire by winners and 2-year-old average, and Quality Road, the leading first crop sire by earnings and graded stakes winners in 2014. When it comes down to it, Lane's End stallions are made for success. To learn more about breeding opportunities, simply visit lanesend.com. We're back to visit with trainer Peter Ertin next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Lane's End. Here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what would be a common misunderstanding between an insured and the insurance company?
Mike, one issue is a policy condition that requires notification when an insured animal becomes sick or injured.
Do you mean in life-threatening situations?
Not just then, but if a veterinarian is called in for treatment other than routine care. Take, for example, if a yearling colt gets his foreleg caught in a fence and tears the skin. The coat is stitched up and everything seems fine, but later the coat develops a systemic infection. Then there is a serious situation that the company knows nothing about.
So the company needs to know, even if it's not a life-threatening situation.
That's right. It's a policy condition. The company has a stake in the health of the animal because of the existing insurance policy. The company might want to have its own vet examine the horse. In most cases, though, just a call or email is all that is needed.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Power.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Passion.
And Bodie Meister is turning the Arkansas Derby into an absolute romp.
Performance.
And pioneer of the Nile, Garrick Gomez, has won the Santa Anita Derby.
Gainsway stallion Empire Maker has produced 11 Grade 1 winners, including 2-time Breeders' Cup Distaff winner, multiple Eclipse champion, and 6-time Grade 1 winner Royal Delta. Other Grade 1 winners by Empire Maker include Emollient, In Lingerie, Country Star, Mushka, Acoma, Icon Project, Last Full Measure, and Grace Hall. The heir of Mr. Prospector's best classic line, Empire Maker, boasts an impeccable pedigree. Out of Broodmare of the Year, Tussaud.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
And they're off to New York. The premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Every industry has a way to compare quality. The benchmark in the thoroughbred industry has always been Grade 1 winners, and no other active sire in North America has had more success than Giant's Causeway. His Grade 1 supremacy continues with stars like Brody's Cause.
Brody's Cause and Corey Lannery, a tremendous run.
Giant's Causeway. standing at Coolmore America, home of champions.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Catherine Sophia Roberto Rosetta, you have to ask her for her best, and she's opened up now 6-7 lengths. He just took a peek back and sees the competition getting farther and farther behind. Catherine Sophia will give them something to talk about in the Gin Talking Stakes as she just absolutely gallops under the line. Full of run.
Catherine Sophia cruised to an easy win in the Gin Talking Stakes on December 5th at Laurel. The daughter of Darley Stallion Street Boss remains perfect, running her record to an unblemished 2-for-2, and her scintillating effort makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Boss, the fastest son of the Great Street Cry, has produced Grade 1 winners Capo Bastone and Danza from his first two crops, and is more likely to get a winner than Curlin, Midnight Lou, Into Mischief, or any member of his sire crop. To learn more about Street Boss and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You are listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They have a quarter of a mile left to go, and here's Pacific Heat in the pink to get the lead. And Pacific Heat, not yet been asked to run, takes the advantage, and Pacific Heat, the one to beat, now opens up with an eighth of a mile to go. Sam Bams are jamming back in second, homeward bound, and it's all Pacific Heat, clear by a big four lengths and bounding home to an impressive win. Pacific Heat and Joe Talamo take the Golden State Juvenile Fillies. Sam Bams a jam in second. Patriotic Diamond got third, and then close for fourth, Yodeling Song and Red Stitch.
Trevor Demon with the call of the Golden State Juvenile Fillies. That was at Del Mar on October 29th, and Pacific Heat remaining undefeated, a perfect 2-for-2 with that winning effort. And Peter Erton is the trainer of Pacific Heat. She is the morning line favorite at 3-1 in this afternoon's Grade 1 Starlet at Los Alamitos. And he joins us now on the Equine Forum presented by Lane's End. Peter, Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Chris McCarron with you this morning. So welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning, guys. How y'all been?
Pretty good. How are you, Pete?
Been a long time, dude.
Yeah.
All right, Pete. But, Mike, Jude already knows this, but you may not. Pete is one of these overnight sensation trainers.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's, I'm like 60 years old and been doing this since like last week.
Well, congratulations on all your rapid success, Pete.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about this filly. She's pretty good.
Yeah, she's done nothing wrong, that's for sure. I mean, never expected that really on dirt, to be totally frank, but all good.
Yeah, congratulations, Pete. She's run two dynamite races, and I was just looking at the form, and man, oh, man, it's a tough race, huh?
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, it's probably there's a lot of speed, obviously. I mean, I think Baffert's going to be having to let his filly run from the outside, and we took a hold of her last time just to trying to get her to see if she was that one. She got a little bit aggressive, I would say. She grabbed a quarter in the race and still run her race, but hopefully she learned a little bit from it.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, I was just telling Jude, anytime Baffert's got a horse in a race, it's 5-1. With the form that filly's got, you know it's a tough race. Baffert's filly's only been not the favorite one time, and I think she went off at 2-1 that time, and she was Songbird was the favorite in the race. Every other time she was less than even money, so it just demonstrates what a tough race it is. But I hope your filly gets the job done, especially with my man Joe Talamo in the saddle.
Joe kind of fell into it there pretty good. I think Bayrano kind of left me hanging. For the most part, he didn't know whether he was a rider or not until like the last minute. I guess it was a tough decision for him back in Del Mar, so I can understand that.
Well, Pete, you mentioned that she surprised you, especially on the dirt. You look at her pedigree. She's a daughter of Unusual Heat out of a Stormy Atlantic mare, and that would suggest that turf would be her game. Did she surprise you with that 13-length win in her debut on September 25th?
Yeah, I mean, especially like she did out of the one hole, which, as you well know, I don't usually crack too often with first timers. Usually when they do that, they're usually pretty special. But, yeah, for sure I was surprised. I mean, 13, I think, I guess. I kind of equated it to, well, LaSalle is a very tight racetrack. It's like turf, and maybe she, you know, that's what kind of worried me a little bit. But when she got to Santa Anita and trained over that surface, she kind of like just continued where she was in LaSalle. So I'm hoping she's just more than just a one-track kind of a filly. So we'll see how it goes.
You paid $175,000 for her, which is quite a bit for a cowbred. You must have seen a lot of things that you liked there.
Well, yeah, I've had a lot of success with unusual heats, and her bottom side has already produced a stakes winner. And, I mean, she was just lovely to look at. I mean, we took a chance, and the guys were game, and Joe's always game. Speaking of Joe Siagbe, he's always been a player, even with less money. So, you know, I got to equate that to the clients, or they like the client.
Talking with trainer Pete Erton here on the Equine Forum presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pacific Heat going to the post in the Grade 1 Starlet later this afternoon at Los Alamitos. Pete, you mentioned last time you took a hold of her with Joe Talamo. She rated in fourth, much different than her wire-to-wire win in her debut. How big of an advantage is it to know that she is that versatile, and is that a big advantage for a guy like Joe Talamo who's going to be aboard?
Well, it's a huge advantage. I mean, to be able to be versatile. I mean, when you can settle off of a strong pace and just kind of smoke a cigar, so to speak, and then go when you need to go instead of using your horse up so much. And I'm still not 100% sure that she will settle as nice as we need her to. But I'm sure if we let her run out of this, she could go possibly gate to wire. But that's a huge risk.
Hey,
you know.
Hey, Pete, this is Chris. I didn't get to see the race, her last race. When she was back, was she in behind any fillies? Was she getting any dirt in her face?
She wasn't far enough back to really, I don't think the dirt got too airborne.
Yeah.
And I don't think you'll find that today either. I don't think she'll be that far off of them. But she was behind horses. She got a little keen, but Joe did a great job in getting her to settle. For the most part, she did grab a quarter in the race because of that, but that's all. It's all on the yield, and so we just have to hope she can do the same thing. She's got a great draw. I mean, over at LaSalle, that turn comes up awful quick. So being in the four hole instead of way down inside or way outside gives you a lot of options, as you all know.
Yeah, you sound like you were just walking by Clocker's Corner a little while ago, were you?
I'm just heading up to the track to watch a couple few gallop, and you know, it's kind of chilly here this morning. I'm getting over a cold, as you can tell.
Yeah, it's chilly here too. It's 63 degrees, and it's 20 degrees above normal for this time of year.
Yeah, is that in the office or is that outside?
Outside.
No, it's outside. I walked in here with a Patriots T-shirt on.
Oh wow! How
because
sweet
is that? I had to compliment Mike Pena's Steeler shirt on over here. So
yeah, I'm still nauseous.
We're on the opposite side of the desk and the opposite side of the fence at the same time. Pete,
they're looking pretty good, I guess, aren't they?
Yeah, both teams are. Now, Pete, do you ride any more in the mornings, or have you given that up?
No, I don't ride anymore. I mean, I kept getting muscle spasms in my back all the time, pinch a nerve, and it just got old, you know. So I need to get my exercise otherwise. I mean, I'm going to walk 7 or 8 miles in the morning back and forth and then I just stay fit in the gym, but... No, I miss it a little bit, and sometimes I don't miss it at all, especially when it's cold.
Yeah, right.
Have you made the adjustment to being Brittany Erton's dad?
Yeah, that's the way it is now. It used to be the other way, but it's okay, though. I'm really happy for her, and I'm proud of her.
Yeah, so, like when I saw you at Del Mar this summer, I told you what a great job she does, and you got to be proud of her. She's fantastic on camera. She does her homework, and she delivers the message very, very professionally.
Yeah, she's comfortable, at least I know that. I think she tried the acting for a while. She didn't really get a break, but I think she does better being herself. And who you see on TV is pretty much who's where it is. You know?
Yeah. And she's a very attractive young lady, too.
Yeah.
Well, Pete, look, we know you've got some other things going on this morning. You mentioned going up to watch a couple horses breeze, so we'll let you go to it and do your job. But all the best this afternoon in the Starlet with Pacific Heat, and we will look forward to talking with you soon. Thanks for being here.
Hey, guys, great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Best of luck, Pete.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Pete Ertin joining us from California, bright and early on the West Coast, but not for a horse trainer. That's what they do. And, yeah, he has a good one there with the undefeated Pacific Heat. She'll look to run her record to 3-for-3 in that Starlet Stakes coming up later on this afternoon. Pete Ertin, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. The Starlet. You won the Starlet, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. That's when it was the Hollywood Starlet, right? Or was it just the Starlet?
It was the Hollywood Starlet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I won it the very first year. It was It was run in 1981.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a filly for Fred Hooper.
No.
Was it Fred Hooper?
What was her name? Ross trained her.
You know what's funny, too, because I wrote it down.
She won the Del Mar Debutante that year, too.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to find out.
Come on.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Roman something?
Was it? Skillful Joy.
Oh, Skillful Joy.
Uh-huh. Was that it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Skillful Joy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had some horses, huh?
Yeah. Oh, man. He had a run going there in the early 80s that was just phenomenal. And unfortunately, some of the colts didn't stay sound enough long enough. But, yeah, Journey at Sea, who won the swaps. He had Advanced Man, who won the San Felipe, was going to be one of the favorites for the Derby that year. And then along came Precisionist.
A freak he was.
Yeah.
You rode him all the time, right?
Yeah, he could run 5/8 and 55 and change, and he won 3 graded stakes going 1.25 miles.
Yeah.
He won the swaps in like 1:58 and something.
He was kind of like Dr. Fager. I mean, he's just one of those horses that could do anything. Very versatile, very fast horse.
Yeah, I don't know if he was as good as Dr. Fager, but he is of that ilk, you know?
Yeah.
He would just come out of the gate. I got more nervous riding him than any other horse I ever rode because he was so brilliantly fast. I just thought to myself, just stay out of his way. You know, just don't get in his way and don't hamper him. Let him do his thing. And when I first got the mount on him, Ross and I were always trying to slow him down, come out of the gate, take a hold of him and see if we could get him to rate. And then when he ran in the San Rafael as a 3-year-old going 1 mile, Ross said to me, look, just let's forget about trying to muscle him. You know, just take a long hold of him and let him do his thing. And so he went 22-45-9-3 on the way to win by 5. And then a couple of years later, I was on his back. I think I've probably told you a story before, but I was breezing him a week before the Santa Anita Handicap. I think he was a 4-year-old at the time. And he won all 3 races. He won the Malibu, the San Fernando, and the Stroob. And so now he's going to be the favorite for the big cap. And so a week before the race, Ross says to me, I need a good work in him. So, you know, warm him up good. And when you turn for home, I want you to ask him to run, make him finish. I said, well, what kind of time are you looking for? He goes, I'd like to see him going about 11. I said, okay. So I followed his instruction. I turned for home and I asked the horse to run. He went down there in 9-2.
Wow.
And Ross was not too happy. I gallop up alongside him with a pony at the 5/8 pole, and his team's coming out of his, oh, man, you just left his race right there on the racetrack. I said, well, he went great. I said, man, he did it fairly easy. I said, how fast did he go? He said, 9-2. I said, well, you told me to go in 11. 9-2 was 11. He wasn't laughing like you guys are laughing.
I could see Ross with the steam coming out of his ears. He was another guy. He always had a great attitude, very happy-go-lucky guy. But, man, when he'd get mad, ooh, you don't want to be around.
No.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
All right, one final commercial break to get to, then we're going to come back. We'll spend the rest of the show visiting with Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron as he is in studio with us here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Click, order, eat. The new way of ordering Jimmy John's Freaky Fast, Freaky Good Sandwiches is a trend that's sweeping the country. With me tonight to discuss this amazing phenomenon is Ed Stephanopoulos.
Hello.
America's favorite sandwich delivery guy.
That's not entirely true, Bob.
Excuse me?
Technically, all Jimmy John's delivery guys are America's favorite sandwich delivery guys, not just me.
I see. Okay, but we're here tonight to...
Actually, what I just said wasn't entirely true either, Bob. See, some of Jimmy John's delivery guys are actually delivery gals.
All right, so now we...
Or women, or ladies, or females, or persons of the non-male gender.
Ed, could we...
Although I guess that would be a mouthful.
A what?
I mean, if I had to say America's favorite sandwich delivery women or ladies or females or persons of a non-male gender.
Okay, let's say that regardless of whether your Jimmy John's sandwich will be delivered by a guy or a gal...
Or a woman or...
The fact remains that now you can order that sandwich online using Jimmy John's amazing Click Order Eat system.
That's correct, sir.
And what would you say is the basis of that system, Ed?
The what?
The basis, the essence, the sine qua non.
It's Click Order Eat, Bob.
Moving along here, Ed, what would you say has made Click Order Eat so wildly popular?
Well, what do you think, Bob?
It's freaky fast.
Bingo, Bob.
Click Order Eat, Jimmy John's freaky fast new online ordering system.
You sound just like a commercial, sir.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
Stop charging. Maria wins the Longines Breeders' Cup Distaff. It is all Songbird. Mike Smith aboard, crushing the field. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming to the final furlong. Walk White is tenacious. Ali Sheba is right there, and on the outside, seeking the gold. Ali Sheba with the short lead. He's unyielding, seeking the gold. A final move. And he does it here again at Churchill Downs. Ali Sheba wins the world's richest horse race, and he's now the world's richest horse.
Well, we couldn't go the full 2 hours and not spend a few minutes talking about the great Ali Sheba, that call of the 1988 Breeders' Cup Classic by Tom Durkin. And it was truly a memorable moment in thoroughbred racing. Ali Sheba, one of the greatest of all time, and Chris McCarron was aboard. And Chris, I know, a very special horse to you.
Oh, yeah, he certainly was. Got my first Derby. And that particular evening, when we got back to the winner's circle, there was a group of people holding up this big banner, Ali Sheba for President, which I thought was pretty cool. And it was so dark that during that race, you know, the watching the race on video doesn't really do the darkness of that day justice, because you can increase the gain on those television cameras to make it look brighter than it actually is. And the evidence to that is where when you see the wind photo and how bright the lights are for the photo finish camera, you know, to be able to capture Ali Sheba and Seeking the Gold hitting the wire together, it was pretty dark. And it was a long day. It was cold, rainy. And I never in my wildest dreams ever thought that I would be happy to be sitting out a $2 million race. I rode every race on the card except for the turf, which is the race right before the Classic. And I was really getting tired. I had, for the Breeders' Cup, you want to walk in the paddock with nice, clean clothes on, right? So it's a long walk back from the track to the jockey's room at Churchill Downs. Get back in there, wash off, you know, wash your hands and face. take your pants off. Your valet gets all the mud off your boots. Then you put a new pair of pants on, a clean pair of pants, put the boots back on, get redressed again, flak jackets and, you know, that was before flak jackets. But, you know, make sure you got five pairs of goggles that are all set and ready to go on top of your helmet. And sometimes you get hung up because you got to do interviews afterwards. If your horse ran well or if you're on a favorite, doesn't run well, you got to stop and do an interview. Now I'm behind. Now I got to run back to the jocks room. And so the day is really hectic. And finally, about 40 minutes before the classic, I got a chance to just take my clothes off and sit on my bench and just reflect on the day, what has happened already, and then get myself mentally prepared for riding the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Classic $3 million race with Horse of the Year on the line. So it was an exhausting day, but a very, very exciting day. And it culminated with one of the most exciting victories I've ever experienced.
Yeah. Yeah, it was spectacular.
Who's the horse that most people ask you about? I mean, you've ridden, you know, great horses, but is there one that like most fans, they meet Chris McCarron, they go, oh, I remember so-and-so, or I really loved watching you ride whoever. Who's that horse?
Yeah, it's mostly John Henry, Ali Sheba, and Tiz Now. You know, those are the three that usually come to mind with fans. If I'm asked who's the best horse I ever rode, I always say Ali Sheba. However, Pat Day always, without hesitation, says Easy Goer is the best horse by far he's ever ridden. And if that's the case, I might have to say Sunday Silence is the best horse that I ever rode because he beat him 3 out of 4 times.
Right.
And but I only got to ride Sunday once. And it was in the Breeders' Cup Classic at Gulfstream Park. And, you know, he got the job done and was Horse of the Year that year. And I didn't get to ride him as a four-year-old because I broke my left leg, my right leg, and my right arm in a spill the day that I was supposed to ride him in the Californian. And P-Val got the mount on him, and he won. But he was a very, very special horse. And there is a gentleman who won an Emmy Award for an ESPN 30 for 30 episode that he produced about the two brothers that defected from Cuba and went on to become very talented pitchers in Major League Baseball. And he's doing a documentary on Sunday Silence's life and career. And he came here from Los Angeles during the October meet at Keeneland. And he arrived in town, expected to spend 3 or 4 hours at Stone Farm out in Paris, and spent 3 days.
Mm, wow.
One of his cameramen brought a drone with him. And so they filmed above Stone Farm using a drone. And then they did an interview with me at Keeneland in the jockey's room a couple days after they were done out at Stone Farm. And, of course, they interviewed Arthur and Stacy and other members of the family. And I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful presentation of Sunday Silence's life and career.
That's great. Looking forward to that.
You know, we have about 8 minutes or so left in the program, and if you have a question that you've always wanted to ask Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron, go ahead and tweet to us at HRN on Twitter or send us an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and we'll go ahead and try to ask that before we go off the air here at 10 o'clock Eastern time. But so many questions, so many things that you can get into here with Chris, and so many great horses that he's been around in that Hall of Fame career. And, Chris, people will maybe forget that you had the opportunity to ride the Great Lady's Secret as well. That's another name that stands out.
I did. I won a stake on her as a two-year-old, yep. Exactly. And I think it was the Pocahontas or something like that at Hollywood Park, and it was in the fall meet. And then I rode her. I won a little stake on her at Monmouth Park in her second-to-last race, which put her over the top as far as leading money-winning filly of all time. And then her last start was at Saratoga. It wasn't a very pleasant one. She was a heavy favorite in the allowance race, believe it or not. In a five-horse field, I was number five. It was pouring cats and dogs. And when we came out of the starting gate, this little mare didn't want to run. And she went into the turn and went straight. She bolted. And I had to pull her up. And she was sound and everything. I mean, I don't know why she did what she did. So when I went jogging back in front of the stands with the outrider and everybody could see that she was jogging soundly, they started booing, which is unusual for a Saratoga crowd.
Yeah.
You know, you get that all the time at Aqueduct and Belmont, but very seldom does anybody boo at Saratoga. But that was a very anticlimactic way for that mare to go out. But she was some kind of special. Horse of the Year in 1986.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite horses that you were – well, actually, there were two. Passayana was number one. And Bien Bien. I loved Bien Bien. I thought he was such a cool horse.
They were both wonderful racehorses. Passayana was certainly very special. I think the best mare I've ever ridden, though, would either be Glorious Song. I rode her back in 79 and 80. Or Bayakoa. I got to ride Bayakoa twice. I rounded up a bunch of jockeys at Santa Anita per the request from Ed Allred, Dr. Allred, who owns Los Alamitos. They had a harness meet going on at the time, and he asked me if I could get eight jockeys to come over. He'd donate $10,000 to the Don Macbeth Memorial Jockey Fund, and it would put on this event, you know. And so Lafitte was one of the jockeys, Gary Stevens, Eddie, Rafael Meza, and I forget the rest of them, but Sandy Hawley. So there were two heats of four horses each, and then the last heat would be the first two finishers of the first two heats. And so Lafitte's number three, and I'm number four in the last heat. We went about 100 yards, and his horse broke stride, and the hobbles tripped him, and he fell. And his bike came over in front of my bike and tipped me up in the air. I looked back, and Lafitte's on the ground. And, of course, the outriders came out, and they told everybody to pull up. So here we're over there raising money for the permanently disabled, I mean, for the Don Macbeth Fund. And we spent 2 hours after the races in the hospital with Lafitte. He broke his collarbone for the 13th time.
No, wow.
And so Tony Matos wouldn't speak to me for a year because I recruited. he was Lafitte's agent at the time. So that was on a Friday night. On that Sunday, I won the Santa Maria Stakes on Bayakoa and then came back 3 weeks later and she won the Santa Margarita because Lafitte wasn't back yet. And so I won two grade ones on by a Cohen.
Did Tony send you a bill?
Tony was not a happy camper. He was not a Chris McCarron fan for a while.
I remember when that happened. I was like, that's so freakish. The whole thing was just crazy.
There are a ton of Chris McCarron fans throughout HRN Nation, and you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, scroll back through the Jock Talk shows to December 23rd of last year, and Chris joined us for the full hour to talk about his life and his career and growing up in Massachusetts and riding in the Northeast and then heading out to California. It's all there. You go back to December 23rd, Jock Talk, presented by Tito's, and you can tune in and listen. And by the way, when you're on our website, make sure you check out our Trainer Talk show from this past week with John Paracella. Some amazing stories coming out with John over the course of that hour. And Jock Talk with Taylor Rice this past week was a lot of fun as well. Those are both on our website at horseracingradio.net. Chris, I know one question. One question has come up on Jock Talk, and we only have 3 or 4 minutes left in the show, but we've kind of gotten into the habit of asking some of the jockeys to tell us about the strangest directions they've ever received from a trainer in the paddock before a race. What are some of your memories of maybe the strangest set of instructions that you ever received?
Jude would remember this gentleman, John Del Prado, a very prominent owner and breeder and trainer out in California for many years. When I moved out there in 1978, I picked up the mount on a very nice mare that he had called Lucy Manet. And she was running the graded stakes on the turf and so forth. And so about halfway through the Hollywood meet, he asked me to come by his barn. Well, I went by his barn, and he said, I'd like you to breeze a mare for me tomorrow. And so I didn't know who it was at the time. And then when I saw the filly come out of the stall, I recognized her because I'd watched her run. And I thought, oh, my goodness, that's a nice mount, you know. And so he went through this whole instruction process a week before the race. He says to me, okay, these are the nominations. The entries aren't even out yet. These are the nominations. This filly is going to have this kind of speed. This filly is going to have this kind of speed. This filly is going to be laying here, there, and this is where you're probably going to be. So therefore, this is how we're going to breeze her this morning. He was determining the way she was supposed to breeze that morning a week before the race on how he thought the race was going to come up 7 days from now.
That's great.
I thought that was, at first, I thought, wow, this man must be genius. You know? but
no, just nuts.
he was a great guy to ride for. He was very successful for a long time out there, and his son Don carried on the colors after that, after John passed away. But that was kind of strange.
Well, Chris, we can't tell you how much we've enjoyed having you on board for the 2 hours this morning, and want to congratulate you on the birth of your new baby grandson, which happened about 6 weeks ago.
That's right.
And congratulations on that. Enjoy
Thank
your
you.
Time with him, and all the best for a Merry Christmas as well.
Thank you. Same to you. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and best of luck to everybody out there in the land of horse racing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been
it's our
show.
Game.
Yeah.
So
been a
much fun
show.
Yeah,
a couple of
fantastic.
Hours. You and I are back together again next week, my friend.
Yep.
But of course, people can catch us during the week as well with a lot of different programs. Our schedule is on our website at horseracingradio.net.
Trainer Talk Wednesday. We'll be
Jock
back
Talk Tuesday.
Jock Talk
Trainer
Tuesday.
Talk. Call-in shows.
The
get
whole
the Brisnet
nine
call-in show. Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview, which, by the way, you can go listen to this week's edition on our website right now. A lot of things there at horseracingradio.net. I want to thank all of our guests, Acacia Courtney for calling in from Hong Kong, Barry Pearl for talking about the Jockeys and Jeans event, and Peter Erton joining us just a short time ago. Been a fun program. We're back next week. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for our special guest, Chris McCarron, and for the Pontiff Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. And, of course, go Steelers!
Good night, Barbados.